This podcast is a publication of the Engineering Management Institute, where we are committed to building professional development systems, including project management and people leadership programs that support the growth of engineers and their firms. Download our AE Industry Trends Report for insights on the Great Resignation, remote work productivity, and people-centric cultures. To get your copy, visit engineeringmanagementinstitute.org.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Engineering Career Coach Podcast, where I'm talking with Peter Schroeder about how he transitioned from being a radio host and DJ to becoming a successful tech entrepreneur. We'll talk about mistakes and challenges and leadership lessons he's learned over the years about how to compete in this competitive world. I'm your host, Jeff Perry. I'm a leadership and career expert and the author of The Intentional Engineer. You can find more information on my work at jeff-perry.com. And this is the Engineering Career Coach Podcast. Podcast brought to you by EMI, the first podcast dedicated to helping engineers and technical professionals with both their personal and professional development. It's now time to jump into the main segment of our episode. I have the pleasure to have with me Peter Schroeder. Peter, welcome to the Engineering Career Coach Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been excited to be here.
Yeah. Now, Peter, you've got kind of a fun story. I'd love for you to tell us about yourself, a little bit about your story. We'll get into it more as we continue throughout our conversation, but help us know a little bit about your background and what does the day-to-day look like? What are you working on these days that's exciting?
Well, the background is I'm from Denmark, grew up there and started out really young with radio stuff when I was, I think, 10 years old or something like that. On national radio, eventually TV. Then I founded the website that I sold as age 18. Then I became a DJ and an artist, and I ran a record label. And then I sold that and burned out DJing and then started the tech company, which is what I'm working on now.
Okay. So, and so let's dive into that. So a lot of things there and, you know, crossing multiple years, and we could get into it, but in particular, I think is going to be relevant for our audience today is the shift where you were in marketing and music and DJ and radio and all these different things, and now starting a business as a tech entrepreneur. Tell us about that transition. Where did the idea come from? What's that separation that you were trying to make? And how did you have the courage to kind of jump into that when maybe that felt pretty uncertain?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. It's just I don't see myself as one because it's not really a title I give myself. It just happens. Really, just because I have major ADD and I just can't help, you know, getting myself involved in things that I think are interesting, and that just sometimes turned out to become a business. It's really like that. So the reason why I started my current company is I was DJing and playing with an artist and producing music and doing that full on, full force back in 2011, 12-ish. I played 383 gigs in 1 year. It was too much, and I kind of burned out on it. I told my agent back then to put a pause on the gigs for a while, because unlike my friends, I can't sit in a hotel room and make music. I would have, you know, again, the ADD thing. So I had to be in front of my computer and with, you know, my full setup, my studio setup, neatly arranged. So I hadn't made music for a long time because I was just always on the road. So I told him to put a pause on it. And while I was taking that little pause, I was messing with another project where I needed a phone line for it, or like a support line, you know, with a menu, press 1 for support and press 2 for sales and all that. And I couldn't find anything out of the box that kind of fit the bill and also that I could afford. So I was like, okay, I'll just build it myself. And I started doing that, and it was fun. And eventually I kind of had a product that was, you know, that other people could use. So my wife, or we had just started dating back then, she was like, well, let's try and put it online. So we cashed in her 401k and started the business. And I never returned to playing. So I never quit, let's say like that. But I haven't played a professional gig since. And that's 10 years ago now.
Wow. So, I mean, a couple of life lessons in there. First, like, sometimes it's really nice to take a step back instead of just staying in the grind, and sometimes just having a little space can create those ideas and opportunities. And second, in terms of people like, what's that idea of that I might want to do in starting a business? Well, what's a problem you have or that others have? Can you solve it? Would other people want that too? And that's really what it came down to for you.
Exactly, exactly. And I think it's important to not try and necessarily make a business just to make a business. That's usually bound to fail. Instead, if there's something that's just really, really interesting to you that you just can't help not playing around with, maybe it's a hobby today, but maybe there's a business there somewhere hidden, you know, that you never thought of, that you could actually make money doing that particular thing. Because when you're doing something you really love that you just, you know, do anyways, why not make some money off of it and you know, make that your life?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun process to go through. Now, even though you're probably having fun making this new product and things, there's always challenges along the way to starting, growing a business. How do you get those first few customers? How do you get enough traction for it to be meaningful? And then you got to build teams and all these things that you've done over the years. So especially take us to those early days as a new entrepreneur trying, you know, you had the new product and you're trying to get some traction. What was some of that? What were some of those biggest challenges that you were facing then? And how did you navigate through those to say to the point where, hey, I think this is really going to stick and I can continue forward here?
Yeah, that's difficult because in the beginning we had no money and we thought, because this is what everyone tells you, we thought you have to go raise $200 million at a $1 billion evaluation on an idea. That's all you hear about in tech. The only stories you hear. And we thought we had to do that, right? So the first couple of years we spent, you know, trying to get investments at a crazy valuation. And that's really difficult for when you have not an idea, but a product that tries to compete with companies like AT&T and Verizon and these kind of, you know, huge, giant multinational companies. So getting an investment on that is, first of all, really, really difficult. Different ballgame than running a company. And on the other hand is, you know, we had just started dating, my wife and I, and, you know, who's going to invest in a couple that just met a year earlier? Like, that's just almost impossible as well. So we didn't raise money. We got a little bit of friends and family money eventually, but the first couple of years we didn't have anything. And I took a little bit of consulting jobs, you know, on the side to pay the bills. And besides that, we just did everything ourselves. So started out really small with a product that, you know, just catered to a couple of startups. We didn't try to compete with the big guys. We just carved out our own little corner over here and started selling, you know, this product that had, you know, enough features for a startup. And every time we got a new customer, they asked, you know, for something else that we didn't have. And then we built that if it made sense. And that would attract bigger customers. And eventually, a couple of years later, Facebook and Netflix and Airbnb and Lyft and Samsung started signing up, right? So it's really just about slowly building up this product. Don't try to compete with the big guys from day one. And then, you know, reinvest the things that you get in. We reinvested everything. We still do that today. 10 years later, we try to reinvest as much as we can to grow the company. And that's a snowball. You know, the more you reinvest, all of a sudden you can hire a one person and that speeds up everything. And then you can hire two more people and that speeds up. And all of a sudden you have a whole team and then things start really moving.
Yeah. So don't necessarily try and conform to what everyone else is saying. Recognize where you're coming from and how can I get the traction that I need to in with the problem that I'm solving, right? Yep. So recognize that sometimes the classical advice isn't always the best advice for you.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because you only hear about those people that you know, raise that money and have this big exit and all that. That's the only stories you hear. You don't hear about those ones that take the long road because it's not really that interesting. It's not that newsworthy, if you will. But there's a lot of us out there, and that's a real business. It's not, you know, just pump up the valuation and spend as much money as you can and then, you know, crash and burn, but then you made some money for yourself along the way. It's a completely different game. It's not the same kind of business you build.
Yeah. And hopefully much more sustainable for the long term, not just pump and exit and sayonara. I got all my money out of that. Let's go on to the next thing, right?
Yeah, and it's different people too. You know, I'm not the people the kind of a person that goes out and raises billions of dollars and all that. It's people that just are basically in the business of raising money. That's all they do. They are not entrepreneurs. They're not people that build companies or build products. They just raise money for a living. And it's a completely different game.
Yeah. So, Peter, I'm curious. I mean, I think that some of the best learning experiences are learning through the setbacks or the mistakes that we've made. So I'm curious for you, just looking back on some of the challenges, is there one situation or a thing that you did that you would consider, oh, that was a mistake, but it's one of the best learning experiences I've ever had? Anything that stick out like that for you?
For sure. I mean, there's a lot. You live and you learn, right? You learn every single day. I still do. But, you know, if I was to go back to my 22, 23-year-old me and look at what I was doing back then, you know, I didn't know that I have this ADD diagnosis. So I didn't understand certain things about myself. And the problem about that is I want to help everyone and I want to do everything. Everything that I find interesting, I want to be part of. And I want to help as many people as possible. And the things I'm not interested in, I'm not going to get done, period. It's just like that. It doesn't matter how easy or simple it might seem for other people. It's just not going to get done. And I didn't know this about myself. So when I was back in my 22-year-old me and I had my first band and we had success and we were on the road with touring and I had just started a record label and everything was going great and assigning more and more artists, you know, I took more and more on my plate. And I started, you know, wanting to help everyone and promising to do certain things and just not getting it done because either, you know, I didn't have the time for it, my plate was too full or whatever reason that might be. Not that I didn't want to, but I just didn't have the capacity, right? And the problem about that is, you know, it's worse saying yes to something and not doing it than saying no in the first place. So I started burning bridges and, you know, people were mad at me and all these different things. And actually, my agent back then, she pulled me aside and said, "Hey, Peter, what's going on? This is not you. We need to fix this." And she was the one that facilitated the sale of my label and basically pulled the handbrake for a minute there. And I reset. I moved back on my mom's couch for a couple of months and just reevaluated everything. And that was, you know, it was a great learning experience because it taught me a lot of things about myself. It taught me, you know, how to say no in the first place, and also just understanding how much you can deal with and not put too much on at the same time and stay focused. It got me so many things, but it has some consequences, you know, because I definitely I lost some friendship and contacts and stuff like that over the years.
Yeah. So know your limits is what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Set boundaries that are appropriate. Be able to recognize that you have this heart for maybe helping and serving other people, but you can't be everything to everyone. Not to say that you're always going to say no, but need to make sure that if you're going to commit to something that you're going to have the capacity to follow through on that. And because that can make it more detrimental if you, like you said, say yes and then not able to follow through, that makes it worse. So that's
way worse.
Good
than
lessons to learn.
Yeah. And you know what? The thing is, it's not bad to say no. You tend to feel that it's a bad thing when people ask you for something and you say no. It's not. It's okay to say no. People don't get offended. It's actually all right. And it's way worse to say yes and not doing it than just saying no in the first place. So just, you know, learn to say no. That's a really important thing that I think a lot of people could be better at.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, Peter, I want to go to the concept of mentors. I imagine that you've had some people along the way that have been real mentors for you in those early days and maybe help you make some shifts to, you know, you've been in growth stages and how you've been able to get contacts with some of these large companies that you mentioned to be able to do business, and also the concept of now growing teams to handle a larger business. Who, maybe just choose one person that stands out to you. This is a key mentor that really helped you make a big shift and shape your journey that you've been on.
So that's the thing. I have thought about that a lot recently because I never had that. And it's something that I really wish now that I've had because I've actually started being aware of how much that means to other people and how important that is and how much of a difference that makes, you know, having someone in your corner that basically gives you these little ins and outs that people don't tell you, that you don't read about, that you don't learn in school. And I wish I really had that because there are just certain things that would have been a lot easier. I've always taken the long road, everything I've done, and I've never been that good-looking guy that plays the guitar and plays soccer and you know, all the girls want, right? I've never been that. So I've always had to work for everything. What I do have is a crazy stubbornness and persistence. So I will work twice or three times as hard as anyone else and, you know, work 16, 18 hours a day until I get to my goal. But, you know, I really wish I had that someone that no matter what, you know, just wants to give you some help. And without, you know, expecting a lot of things, in return. It's really about that. It's got to be someone who's done it themselves and just really don't expect a lot. I do have some people around me that has meant a lot to me. It's not that, and that have definitely helped me, but it's always been on a kind of a business level. And I kind of wish I had that one person that wishes me as much success as myself. And I think that's tremendously important. I know some of my DJ friends have that, and you know, I can just see how their careers accelerated so much faster than mine because of that.
Yeah. So interesting flip then I want to consider. Were there people that, even if you didn't have that direct communication and line as a mentor, that were still kind of those people that inspired you in some way, that you looked up to, that mm-hmm. you learned from, even if they didn't know that you were learning from? Anyone that comes to mind on that front?
Yeah, for sure. So Jesper Green, my old manager, I think he's actually officially still my manager because the contract is still valid, I guess. I haven't done much lately, but he was my manager through many years and a really, really good guy. He's an old DJ too. And I remember when I first started playing club gigs and as when I was 18, 19, he was probably one of the best DJs in Denmark back then and very technically skilled. So I learned a lot from him just by looking at what he did. And eventually I became friends with him and we are really, really close friends today. Don't talk every day because he lives in Denmark and you know, but it's a very, very good friend. And he definitely taught me a lot without knowing. And also, you know, he had a record label, did a lot of the things I did. So learned a lot from him in that way, that sense as well, in terms of how do you promote artists and stuff like that. He is the man behind some of the biggest artists ever to come out of Denmark. And I definitely learned a lot of that. And I was a big fan of him too, you know, in my early days.
Okay, that's great. So, and I asked that question because, I mean, in this case, you did have a personal relationship with him. But sometimes when we think about the concept of mentors, we think about it just needs to be these people that we have this direct relationship with, where there's all sorts of people that I consider mentors who are authors and speakers or have great YouTube channels that I learn a whole lot from that are mentors to me in a sense, even though I don't have a personal relationship with them yet. And so we can still find those sources of inspiration and have different sorts of mentors even in a different way. So that's why I asked that question. So
yeah, that's interesting.
Peter, I want to now go to considering and learning more about your leadership journey. Because in those early days, it was just you and your then girlfriend, now wife, kind of starting your company and trying to work through some of those challenges to now. I don't know how large your team is. You can tell us more about that. But I imagine you have grown in your understanding and capabilities as a leader. So what's your approach to leadership and what are some of the milestones of ways that you've grown and some big lessons you've had to learn over the years?
So one thing I've learned that I definitely misunderstood in the beginning, I think, and I think there's maybe a tendency to do that, is that leadership and management is not the same. I am a horrible manager. I will be the first to say that. I am not good at following up and making sure people get their shit done, you know, like, and even asking people to do certain things in the first place. I'm bad at that. I wish people could just, you know, pick things out of my brain and go do it themselves and better than what I thought of, you know, that would be great. And I kind of have a team that does that now because that's what I need. And I need people around me that are good at doing things that I'm not interested in, like we talked about before, because of the ADD thing it just doesn't get done if I don't have those people around me. But, you know, one thing is actually that comes to mind right now is eating. I forget to eat. I will work 24 hours and not eat at all unless my team comes in and literally places food in front of me between me and my keyboard. And they do that every day around noon. So super, super thankful for that. One of the things is really, I'm a bad manager and I don't like having a huge staff that I have to manage. So our staff is probably 10% of our competitors compared to how many customers we have and users. And that's really just because I don't want that. And I would rather spend time automating things and making things, you know, smooth and easy so we don't need to have a lot of people. And then pay those people we have a lot more so that they are those kind of people that just pick things out of my brain and do it themselves. So that's one thing. But the whole leadership thing, I think, is probably where I'm pretty strong is being excited about something, you know, having a concept or an idea and being so excited that it rubs off of your team and they get that excited as well and want to do that thing, whatever it is, build it or build a company or some kind of project or whatever it is that you're working on, but getting your team that excited that they, you know, want to do that as much as you. And that's when you build really, really cool stuff, because, well, then you have just people that put everything into it rather than just seeing it as a job that they have to go perform and do that. And then they're off work. No, you want people, you know, to leverage the skills they have and really use their abilities to the maximum. And you do that by getting them excited about what they work on.
Yeah. And such a fun thing. And I love the separation between leadership and management. And the elements that I'm hearing from you on the leadership front is that setting that vision around where we're going, what we're working on, and then the inspiration of getting people bought in and excited with that and bringing them along that process. And I imagine you have some other people around you who can help with the management stuff that maybe you struggle with. So,
and that's where my wife is really good. You know, she's very much very structured, very good at the management part and you know, making sure the company runs. And we have a business operation manager that has been with us for many, many years now, and she's amazing. She does all those things that I don't get done, and makes sure that I do the things I need to do as well. Keeps punking me. So
that's great.
I have a great team.
Yeah. And I can't relate with the not remembering to eat thing. That's something I always remember to do. So that's
it. Yeah, but, I don't know. It's wild.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about, Peter, a number of different kind of traits that have allowed you to be successful. I think you mentioned that, like, you're just really stubborn. You get really hyper-focused. You work your tail off. If there were traits that really rise to the top in terms of these things are critical for someone who wants to start their own thing or be an entrepreneur, that's just sort of who you've always been in the way that you're talking about it. But are there traits that stand out to you that you have or you recognize that others have that really set successful entrepreneurs apart?
Yeah, I think there's two specific traits. I think you touched on it, you know, the stubbornness, right? If you don't want to see me succeed in something, don't tell me I can't do it. It's fire, you know, like it fuels my fire so much. I'll make sure that I can do that thing and I will do it well and prove you wrong. And I'm so stubborn, you know, when it comes to that. My wife will definitely agree. If there's something I want to do, I'm going to do it. And if you tell me no, I'm going to do it even better. So having that stubbornness and, you know, the ability to just bounce up when things go wrong, because things will go wrong and it's a perpetual roller coaster. It never ends. 10 years later, we've been doing this and there's still ups and downs every single day. You know, having that ability to just brush it off and get back up and keep trucking and just be stubborn and say, hey, I'm going to keep going. That is really, really important, because running a business is not easy. And no matter what people tell you, you are going to have a lot of problems along the way, and you need to fix that and figure out how do you fix that so you can keep going. That's one thing. And I think the other is naivety. Being, you know, a little naive about how you see the world and yourself, not to a degree to where you're completely delusional, but it's, you know, having that belief that whatever product and whatever you're doing will succeed, even though that it may be not completely sensible. For example, running a phone company or starting a phone company and going up against AT&T with a 401k cashed in $16,000, right? That doesn't make sense logically. But I knew that we had a good product, and I knew that we eventually could compete. So having that little thing, you know, I think it's Pippi Longstocking that says, I've never done that before, so I'm sure I'll be good at it. That thing, I think, encapsulates it. And I think it's really important to have a little bit of that. Not to a degree where you are completely crazy, but just a little bit of it.
Yeah. So for our listeners, both these things, Peter is definitely expressing some nuance, right? And how you, for him, these are strengths that he can lean into in the right situations and opportunities. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't want to be stubborn on every single thing in your life, and you want to be naive in every single thing in your life.
Right.
But when applied in the right context, it can be real strength. So now, Peter, I'm curious, what's the next big jump that you're looking to make personally or in the business or whatnot?
So the funny thing, and this is actually crazy to me, I've done this for 10 years now and it's still fun. Normally things don't last that long for me.
Right.
But for this particular product and this industry, there's always something new to build and it stays fun. Like now we have AI and now we can build that. And we have a bunch of other things that we've been working on. Right. So it stays fun. And as long as it's fun for me, then I'll probably keep doing it. But I'm not going to be doing this company forever. It's not like it's going to, I don't want it to become a lifestyle business. I want to do other things. I have a new business idea every single day. And eventually I need to own a hot dog stand and stand there and make people happy. So there's always going to be something new. I don't think I will ever retire. That's just not who I am. Yeah. But exactly what the future brings, it's really hard. I think we're seeing a huge change in general about how the world is and how it's going to be in like 5 years from now because of AI and all these things that are happening is, you know, and also just generally politics and all that stuff. There's just so much going on in the world right now that the world is going to be a very, very different place when my kids grow up, even more different from, you know, I saw the internet coming and I remember before the internet, but you know, that change is going to be much, much bigger than the internet and everything that happened there.
Well, I asked this question because you were talking about your stubbornness, and I just want to tell you, I don't think there's any way that you could possibly pull off a good hot dog stand. And and there's no way you're going to be able to successfully integrate AI into what you're doing. So I hope that just lights just a little bit of fire, because I don't think you can do it.
So you're going to have a really good hot dog, believe me.
Yeah, I look forward to it. All right. Peter, as we end off here, we've talked about a lot of different traits and things. We've probably got some listeners right now who are thinking about, maybe I want to start my own company. Maybe I want to go into tech. And they're saying, hey, Peter started from nothing and put a big risk in cashing out the 401k and other things. Like, I don't know if I have the guts to do that. But what would you say to those people who have some ideas or inclinations towards entrepreneurship? If they're looking up to you, what would you say to them to help them see what's possible for them?
I'll say everyone's different, and I am probably more risk averse than other people. I'm, you know, there's it's not for everyone, and I'm not saying that everyone should go out and cash in their 401k. It's not a smart thing to do. And I wouldn't recommend myself doing it, and I wouldn't have done it today because now I have kids and I have people actually relying on me. So if I think back, you know, I've been evicted twice in my past years because I go full in on everything, and I mean full on. It's not, there's no halfway for me, and that's just who I am as a person, and I'm willing to do that, and I'm willing to take the consequences if it means that I need to go live with my mom for a couple of months, right, or whatever. But that is just kind of who I am as a person, and I don't think that is a good trait. I don't think it's necessarily a great thing. It definitely allows me to do certain things and accelerate, but there are other ways to do that. I think it's really just a matter of how far are you willing to go, what are you willing to do, and what are, you know, think about the consequences. I always do everything I do. I evaluate very, very, very thoroughly, and I always play devil's advocate against myself in my head constantly, but also against other people. Because I want people to really see every single side and angle at the possible outcome of whatever you're doing before you do something. So I know when things can go bad, and I know what the consequences will be before I do certain things. And I'm willing to take that risk. And that's really it. You have to think about, are you willing to take the risk? And are you willing to face the consequences if it goes bad? That's as simple as it is.
Okay. Very good. Well, Peter, such a fun conversation, and I've got some different ideas swirling through my head, and I'm sure our listeners do too. At this point, though, we're going to transition over to our Take Action Today segment of the show. When we come back, we'll get one final piece of actionable advice from Peter. We'll be right back. Now it's time for our Take Action Today segment of the show. Peter, you've told us a lot about your story around starting and growing this tech business, Telxio. For those who are especially early on in their journey, is there something that stands out you wish you would have known earlier that you would recommend that they do if they're trying to get traction on an idea that they're working on?
Yeah. So I'm a very product-minded person, and I am just focused 100% on building a great product that people love and making people happy. I'm not necessarily that worried about revenue and profits and all that. It's not about the money for me. But obviously, that's a thing. It's important so we can grow the company. And I know that we would have accelerated a lot faster if I had had someone on my team from day one who was sales-focused, sales-minded, who was a really good salesperson. I wish I was focused on getting that person in from the day, from the beginning, because I know we could have grown this company much faster, at least in the beginning. You know, that there's certain things you can't do without money. You know, I would say, make sure you have someone who's focused on that. You need everything on your team. One thing is products and technology and all that stuff, but you also need revenue. And if that's not you, if you're not a salesperson, make sure you have that on your team.
Yeah, good idea. So, Peter, thanks so much for a great conversation and lots of learnings here. I'm sure there are going to be people who are like, hey, this Peter guy's pretty cool. I want to connect with him or learn more about what he's up to at Telxio or other things. Where would you point them to learn more?
Well, so go to my personal website, petersroeder.com. There's all my social media, all my emails even, and all that stuff. And I actually like when people write me, because most of the stuff I get is just business or sales, you know, people reaching out. I don't get a lot of personal conversation or emails or anything like that. So please do. I like that. And then, of course, go to telxio.com to try out the product. There's a free trial and it's actually fun to play with. So at least try it out.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks so much for being with us. And I'm not even going to wish you success, because I don't think you can do it. But that's probably exactly what you need. All right.
Well,
thanks
thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today. We would love to hear your feedback, comments, and questions. You can go to engineeringmanagementinstitute.org, where you'll find a summary of the key points discussed in the episode, as well as links to any of the resources or websites that we mentioned in the episode. And don't forget to check out any upcoming live webinars for this month at the website as well. Additionally, for any engineers who feel like they need extra help taking the next career step or finding clarity in their careers, I've created some free training resources with an opportunity to join a more intensive program called the Engineering Career Accelerator. You can find more information at engineeringcareeraccelerator.com, or you can go grab my career clarity checklist found at www.engineeringcareeraccelerator.com/career-clarity. Until next time, I wish you the best in all of your engineering endeavors.